Hey everybody, welcome to Pittsburgh Comic Podcast number 252. Now, this is a pop quiz. What issue 252 is a very important issue?
No idea.
Can't be a Marvel book, they don't go that high.
Well, they used to. First appearance of the black costume. Ooh. Spider-Man 252, drawn by Pittsburgh native Ron Friends. Yeah.
Right. I can picture it in my mind. Sure.
It was a remake of Amazing Fantasy 15.
Yep.
So, yeah, sorry.
Right after Secret Wars.
That's an important one. So, I'm Colin McMahon, owner of Pittsburgh Comics. Joining me tonight are...
Dave.
Josh.
Pat.
Adam bailed on us, so...
Boo.
It's okay. We'll get him next week.
That means we get out of here earlier.
Yeah.
At least an hour earlier, so... So, Pat, what you got?
Well, I got a few things. We'll start with they dropped the Spider-Man trailer. They
dropped it?
No. They,
like it's hot.
They uploaded onto the interwebs.
And then you downloaded?
Yeah. There was actually two versions of it. Just one was a little bit different, mostly in the order. One was the international trailer.
Okay.
A lot of it had to do with the order of things. Like the scene where they were in the bank with the guys dressed as the Avengers, they had that at the beginning of the trailer in one and in the middle at the other.
Oh, okay.
So, and then whoever his friend is, there was a little more emphasis on his friend in one of them. So, there was nothing in it that wowed me.
Okay.
But, you know, I like the kid. It's definitely he's definitely got the part down, the quips and everything else, and also as Peter Parker, the nervousness, the insecurity is also there, so that I like, but I don't know.
I didn't love the stuff with Tony Stark. It seemed forced.
But I don't know that he's going to be in it the whole time. I mean, that could end up being like kind of the backdrop of him.
Yeah, but if I saw 15 seconds and already I felt like it was too much, that's kind of a problem.
Well, that could be him dropping him off after the airport scene. Maybe. in Civil War. I mean, you never know how they're going to do, or that might be him getting his
there was a shot of them flying side by side.
Oh yeah, that's so. Right, yeah. Yeah, and that's I think we talked about this with the Riri Williams thing. Spider-Man has to learn how to become Spider-Man, but I don't want Tony Stark to show him how to.
And I don't think RDJ does the movie unless he has a substantial part.
Yeah, who knows?
Did either of these show Michael Keaton's
yes.
face? Mm-hmm.
He looks pretty good.
Okay.
Yeah.
I must have not seen one of them.
Yeah, he seems cool.
Actually, I think both of them did. They both had that scene where, you know, he quite menacingly saying, if you don't leave me alone, I'll kill you and your family. Yeah.
I think I'm most excited for Michael Keaton.
Yeah.
The villain in this.
The costume, it didn't wow me.
Keaton's?
Yeah.
Oh, see, I thought it was cool.
No, I mean, it was fine, but it didn't wow me, but it makes more sense.
Do you want more of, like, a classic Vulture?
Well, it's more, even like how they had Falcon has his wings, had they gone more that route instead of the big contraption with the vertical.
It's more like a VTOL.
Yeah, that was kind of, but it makes sense. I mean, technologically speaking, it's something that could exist. As opposed to, you know...
No, I thought it looked cool. He seems menacing. And I'm looking forward to him. I think he always does well whenever he's in, so...
Yeah.
You wanted, like, a Birdman sequel?
You know, I've never seen Birdman.
Really? Birdman is weird as hell, but it's good.
It's been on HBO, and I always, like... It's 2/3 of the way through, and I'm like, I'm not going to start watching it.
You cannot watch it 2/3 of the way through.
Yeah, I didn't think
you
I could.
You have to start at the beginning.
That's what I figured. But I like Michael Keaton, so...
Yeah, it would make even... It doesn't make much sense when you start at the beginning. It would make no sense at all.
Okay.
If you start 2/3 of the way through.
Okay, makes sense. Well, going along with that, they've actually already announced a Spider-Man Homecoming 2 for July 5th, 2019.
I'm going to stop this yawning.
Sorry.
I find that too. Way too soon. I mean, you drop the trailer of the movie 6 months before it comes out to say, hey, and in 2 years after that.
It doesn't mean anything, though. Keep in mind, they had that Sinister Six movie on the books.
Yeah,
which is no longer
happening. But that's kind of why I'm surprised they did it. I mean, at least wait to see what kind of returns you get on this.
The schedule, the schedule's getting crowded at this point.
Yeah, but you can put it in there without announcing it. Because that's the thing, is then if this bombs...
But the other thing it does, though, is by saying we are announcing Homecoming 2, it shows... It gives the idea that they have extreme confidence in this movie. It might drive more people to go see it after the bad Amazing Spider-Man 2 we just had.
Possibly, but right before Amazing Spider-Man 2 came out, they announced the Sinister Six and a Venom movie and an Aunt May movie and this, that, and the other thing. Now, that may have been to do exactly that, but once everyone saw Amazing Spider-Man,
I think at that time they did that because Amazing Spider-Man 1 was successful, and they thought, we have a franchise in our hands. And then Amazing Spider-Man 2 came out, and no one really liked that movie at all. So now there's not that much confidence. It's switched to Marvel Studios now.
Well, it's still a Sony movie.
Yeah, but Marvel Studios is heavily involved.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, just dawned on me that Father Stacy died in 1, Gwen died in 2. Boy, not a good series for the Stacys.
No. David Ayer, who did the Suicide Squad movie, is set to direct a Gotham City Sirens movie with Margot Robbie producing.
This will make no sense, too.
I like Suicide Squad. I get you didn't like it. I enjoyed it.
I thought the story
I enjoyed it sitting there, but the plot made no sense.
Yeah, the plot was awful.
Yeah, but I enjoyed the characters.
Like, they were good as their characters.
Yeah.
The visuals were fine. I didn't like some of the crazy effects they had, but...
The ending I had a problem with, because Enchantress was not that much of a villain, and it's like the same ending you get in
them
every
being
damn
good,
movie.
Like, them being cast well, them being cast well as their characters works for about 15 minutes or so. After that, you need some sort of story to keep it, you know, keep you interested.
Amazingly, though, Suicide Squad won a Critics' Choice Award. Margot Robbie won for Best Supporting Actress.
They're still saying a sequel's in development for that.
Yeah, and they also said something about a spinoff
Deadshot
of Deadshot, but not necessarily a Deadshot solo movie.
Deadshot Boomerang.
Won't be Deadshot, and what's the other guy?
Slipknot.
Yeah, Slipknot. I think you put him in a Batman movie with a...
This is the only guy we didn't get a little quick background origin of. I wonder what's going to happen to him.
He can climb anything. Okay, well, that's kind of useless. He's dead. He might as well just had a red shirt on. The NBC show, Powerless, which is supposed to start showing here soon.
Oh, yeah, I saw this.
So, initially, it was supposed to be about...
An insurance agency.
Yeah, an insurance agency. Well, that idea has now been scrapped, and it's going to be part of Wayne Enterprises.
Yeah, a division that works to create things to kind of protect and empower the average person in this, you know, world with superheroes now.
But the they had already shown
a pilot,
and
it was very well received.
Yeah,
so I'm surprised to hear about this.
Unless they reshot parts of the pilot. I mean, that's...
Or unless the pilot could work either way.
And that's the other possibility. I remember before it was actually shown on TV, I saw the Constantine pilot.
Okay.
And ending
they
was...
changed it.
Yeah, the ending was different.
Yeah.
So maybe that's, you know, just a couple tweaks here and there. And you know, I don't think by changing that it really changes too much necessarily. Although I do find it weird that they would then set it in Wayne Enterprises.
Yeah,
I kind of like the idea of an insurance company being removed from the superhero business as much as possible. And
right.
Rather than...
If they were going to make a part of a company like that, I think it would have been neater if they did something like Cord instead of Wayne.
Yeah, that could have worked. But, you know, I remember hearing at some point they talked about doing a Damage Control series, and I'm wondering if that's why they changed
it. There was talk about that. It kind of died off, but supposedly it's still, you know, in development.
Okay.
But the Damage Control series, I think, was announced first, but Powerless was fast-tracked.
Okay.
So, who knows?
It could be. They announced that Patrick Wilson, who played...
Oh, yeah, I like this.
Okay, so you already know what I'm saying. Yeah, okay. Patrick Wilson, who was the second Night Owl in Watchmen, and he's done a lot of other things.
Oh, okay, that's who that guy
is. He was in the second season of Fargo recently.
I haven't seen that. He was in the A-Team.
I saw the movie.
The show is really good. Oh, it's really, really good.
But he's going to be Orm in the Aquaman movie.
Yeah, it was a case I recognized him, and I just didn't place him or something.
Kind of looks like Orm too, like his face, at least like recent Orm.
Yeah, I can kind of see that. And it's funny because I heard somewhere they were talking about, well, what about Black Manta? But and again, you know, speculation, I think it would make more sense you cast his father in this movie, kill his father off like in the fight with Orm, and then that's how, you know, he becomes, you know, so against. And then you don't need to cast anybody for Black Manta, so if Aquaman fails, then you don't have to have a sequel, it doesn't matter, and you didn't bring this big name in for that kind of part. Not the decisions I get to make, but it's something I'd like to see. I even thought about, like, cast someone like Denzel Washington or somebody like that, who's a name actor, but they're not going to do much because you're going to kill him off right away, and he's kind of... He can kind of play a little bit older, a little bit younger, so you can go whatever age range you want for a Black Manta. So here's something kind of weird. Wonder Woman, who was at one point named a UN ambassador, is not anymore. Because, and I don't know how true this is, but what I read was because of the way she's currently drawn, very busty, and it's
mix
unattainable.
Of things.
For
it's,
women.
It's a mix of things. So I guess even whenever it was first happening, there was a group of UN staffers who were actively protesting against this.
Okay.
And a big thing is people who were signing petitions against her being this ambassador to raise issues for women was that they said that this should be a real person who is the figurehead of this, not some character. And
I don't disagree with that in principle.
I think the UN made a comment that they couldn't decide on an actual person, so that's why they went with the character, and that raised even, you know, more issues with people saying, you know, how can you not find an actual person?
Yeah, you can't find a single.
And then people saying that, you know, and you pick this character who runs around in essentially a star-spangled swimsuit with a, you know, very large chest and not Power Girl, but...
Yeah.
But still, like, very unrealistic, you know, image.
I get that.
And I get those issues. But at the same time...
She's a feminist icon.
But I feel like the UN... I get their point where I'm saying, if we have this character that has a much broader reach, and one of the comments the UN made is that, you know, the people who would recognize an actual person, who that person was, are already, you know... already have that mindset, or already the people that you know believe, you know, what the cause is, or part of the cause, that they think a character has a greater reach for younger audiences who may not be aware of these issues, and it can take those issues much farther out than an actual, you know, spokesperson could.
I think that makes
sense. And I agree with that, but I mean, I get both sides with this. It's just, it's kind of weird. 2 months and then suddenly, and now there's a petition out there to reinstate.
Yeah, why can't you have, I mean,
well,
she's a fictional character, why
can't
you have both?
Why can't you have, you know...
It's not like it's a paid position.
Yeah, why can't you have multiple, you know, representatives for this?
You know, I kind of and, you know, maybe not as much as Batman, but if you show people pretty much anywhere in the world a picture of Wonder Woman, they know who that is.
I would say as much as Batman. I would say Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman would be equally recognizable.
But I mean, you know... maybe
Captain
maybe
Marvel. Come on.
Yeah.
Why are you hitting on Marvel, man?
But
She-Hulk? Shazam?
Yeah, exactly. Shazam. Yeah, but that's all the problems in the world. This is what you're worried about, really, because she has big boobs and runs around in a swimsuit. Okay.
I mean, I get both sides of it, but
I do to an extent too. But it's then get someone else next year. Yeah. Make it Linda Carter. Make it Gal Gadot. You know, they've both played the character.
I mean, they were both there for the ceremony.
I know.
Linda Carter.
I know.
They both spoke.
Yeah, so she's unattainable. She can't look like a real person.
Okay. DC announced some crossovers. So the first... Yeah. Well, hold on.
You just got Colin really excited.
That's right.
Me too.
Well, Dave, this first
one's...
You
gonna sing the song?
The first one's for you.
Go ahead.
It's not that one yet. I'll get to that. The first one is Archie in DC. It's going to be Tiny Titans and Little Archie.
Oh, okay.
And then, if you can't guess by now, they're also crossing over with their Hanna-Barbera line and adding some additional characters. Colin's favorite, and probably the one I'm looking most forward to, is Suicide Squad and Banana Splits.
So I don't remember Banana Splits at all.
I don't remember specifically. I remember the theme song.
Yes.
I remember the title sequence.
Yeah.
I don't remember it specifically,
so it
but I remember.
It was like the Croft puppets with the big heads
and
everything.
Yeah, I don't remember that at all.
Oh. Yeah, they were
just one of those good. I remember that. Just one of those good memory feelings.
More the song than anything else.
Yep.
They were in this clubhouse, and
they were a band.
A lot of wacky sound effects.
Slapstick type stuff,
you
know,
yeah.
Hitting the one guy, yeah. And he flips. You know,
they did play some cartoons,
but they weren't Banana Splits cartoons.
It would have been, you know, a little five minute.
Popeye and things like that were played in there.
But it's
they
just
they had like a Huck Finn cartoon, an Arabian Nights cartoon.
Okay,
they had a live action. Remember this, Colin? Danger Island.
No,
it was a live action. These people were marooned on this island,
okay.
And there was this native guy named Chungo, and his catchphrase was "Uh oh, Chungo!" whenever he would, you know, fly into action.
That I certainly don't know.
It was directed by Richard Donner.
Wow,
nice.
And Jean Michael Vincent was.
But
in it.
Okay,
oh,
read the rest though.
Hold on.
Just played it for my son.
Well, I want to hear it.
Okay.
The podcast wants to hear it.
Yes,
okay.
Please.
Well, I just sang it.
Yeah.
And they're riding these dune buggies around.
Yeah.
I just saw the dune buggy. Now they're doing their band stuff.
Yep.
Oh, they're throwing kids up in the air. This is getting crazy. There's a bear holding a child swinging in the air. These animals are getting nuts. This is a long intro.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a full song.
They're on trolleys, Golden Gate Bridge, they're whitewater. Dave, you're getting excited.
I am. I love bands.
Now imagine this with Harley Quinn and Killer Croc and
it's brilliant.
And the others, because one of them's not.
Well, yeah, but I mean, they can out crazy Harley, you know, so.
Yeah, that makes sense.
They're riding roller coasters. Holy cow, every time I think we're almost at the end, I look and
nope.
Say,
next verse.
Verse.
Yeah.
They're on the beach right now. They're surfing. They're doing gymnastics. Oh, pie in the face. Snake popping out of a can. This is the craziest intro.
See? And the backup for that.
They're getting punched in the face now. Now the Suicide Squad's getting involved.
But
Dune Buggies again.
The backup with this is going to be Snagglepuss.
Oh.
Right. Written by?
I don't know.
Mark Russell.
Mark Russell.
I didn't write it all down.
Mark Russell from Prez and Flintstones.
The pitch for that is incredible.
What's the other book he did?
He's like in the New York
Times.
Well,
he's
Tennessee
Williams. God is disappointed in you in Apocrypha now.
Oh.
So there's that one. Adam Strange and
Johnny Quest.
And then I think that has Top Cat as its backup.
The one I'm looking forward to most, I think, is the
Green Lantern Space Ghost.
Yeah, that's
the other one I'm looking forward to. Green Lantern Space Ghost.
But Booster Gold Flintstones, written by Mark Russell. Come on, that's brilliant.
And that has the Jetsons backup.
Yeah, by the Palmiotti and Connor.
Connor. So,
but you know, when I saw this and I shared it with you guys, but I sent an email to Stuart at DC saying, "Awesome, just brilliant." Because here I am, I'm 49, I'm excited about this book. Banana Splits, Suicide Squad makes no sense. Has no reason for existing.
Yet it makes absolute sense.
I am excited
sense.
About it.
And they're just one-shot annuals,
yeah.
right? It's
yeah.
not like a miniseries.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I posted that, and I posted on the Facebook, on the store Facebook page saying, sorry, but I'm really excited about this. Just, you know, I have no excuse for it. And two other people going, sign me up.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I'm already getting people excited about this. On the flip side, you have Marvel, who is addressing, trying to pitch everything to, you know, trying to grab the young female audience and get going young with all their books. And it's like, I'm not seeing the excitement from these people going in. Oh, I can't, we got the Gwenpool Christmas special. I don't think I sold one today.
What are you talking about? Marvel dominated the market share, the unit
share,
the dollar
share. We'll get to that. But I'm just like, you're hitting the nostalgia button on this, and that's all. Dave and I are excited about it for nostalgia reasons. Mm-hmm. I don't even totally remember it, but enough to make me go, oh, I remember rushing home from school after, you know, to see that. So I'm excited about it, and sadly, I also have the money to be able to buy it. Whereas these 15, 16, 17 year old kids that they're attacking, you know, that they're not attacking, they're addressing their line to, don't have the $4 and $5 or $6 for that Gwenpool Christmas special. No kid is coming in and buying that. So I just think, you know, they're doing it right. They
to
know,
be fair, DC's Christmas special was $10 today.
It was, but it was huge.
And it sold out.
It was huge.
Oh, was it?
It was like double Deadpool.
I didn't get to see how big
it was.
It was
double Deadpool.
Yeah, I
Dead
didn't
Man. So I apologize. It was a $10 book. I only ordered a few. Yeah, well, I ordered 10. Just more than I ordered a slapstick. But I just think, you know, they realize it's an annual. It
Did
doesn't
you
matter.
A slapstick too?
No. But you know, it's an annual, it's a throwaway, it's not important in the grand scheme of things, so they're just having fun, and I think they really, I'm excited, I'm looking forward to these books. Also, because the Hanna-Barbera line is doing great for me.
Is it?
Yeah. I mean, absolutely great. When I look at stuff, what came out today? Scooby? Was Scooby Apocalypse today?
Yeah.
And I ordered 30-some copies, which is more than any Marvel book except for Spider-Man.
Wow.
So, I mean, IVX ordered 20. You know, to give you an idea.
That's the only one that I did not try out.
The Scooby Apocalypse. Yeah. I was never a huge Scooby-Doo.
No, I haven't read
Scooby,
that yet.
But the idea of Scooby Apocalypse, I wasn't sold. And
I would like
Keith
to see,
Giffen,
like, a modern version of Scooby-Doo where they had the Scooby-Doo movies where they met, like, the Addams Family and Genie and all that. That would be cool.
Every book I read written by Keith Giffen, I feel like one issue I really like, and next issue I feel like it is just painful to try and get through.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so Wacky Raceland was probably my lowest seller of that.
I didn't like
Wacky
Raceland.
But Flintstones was last week, and it had a Bill Sienkiewicz cover. I'm just like, that's just awesome. But I also understand it's probably not selling well nationally, because a lot of people are going, Flintstones? That's stupid. No. And I understand, but they don't understand it's political, social commentary.
Yeah.
It's Mark Russell who did Prez that also didn't sell well enough. What? Did you what?
I think I forgot to read Flintstones last week.
Okay.
That, or I read it when I was tired and I can't remember it.
But just, yeah, I'm just
about the end of the world.
And I also told Stuart that in
Sounds
light of recent events,
tired.
We need to finish Prez. We need the second half of that book, no offense.
Oh, you got it. You got it in 8 pages in the Catwoman.
It was
story.
A great 8 pages,
yeah.
But it didn't wrap up her
it
story.
Was surrounded by a bunch of garbage.
Hey, that was Meredith Finch. Stop that. Be nice. Hater. Hater. Finch
injustice.
Hater.
Vegetative injustice.
But yeah, I'm very excited about the Hanna-Barbera. So, and I compliment them on taking a license that they have that makes no sense.
Oh, yeah.
What are we supposed to do with this? And they addressed it brilliantly. Flintstones, a social commentary. You know, Scooby. We got Scooby-Doo. Well, I mean, they already do the kids' Scooby-Doo books. Let's do a post-apocalyptic Scooby-Doo. Who came up with that idea?
Yeah.
But congratulations, it's different.
One,
it hasn't been seen.
One of the other backups we didn't mention is Rough and Ready by Howard Chaykin.
No,
okay.
That one,
yeah.
I don't remember
that's
Rough and Ready
the,
at all.
That's like from maybe the 50s even. That was Hanna-Barbera's first cartoon. So I don't really remember it either as, you know, first run.
But
not that old.
I give him a lot of compliment for taking chances and just throwing stuff out there. I think it's going to be fun.
I'm a little upset, though, because this last set of annuals we had, the Batman annual, a Batman El Cabong annual together would have been perfect.
I hope that's
but
common.
Let's see
there's
this
so
one. So
do.
This one's probably going to be like in March.
Yeah.
So there's going to be more fifth weeks if this works, then we get, you know, I remember we were, you know, the Megilla Gorilla Flash, you know, where they're in search of, you know, Musa or Mala or something, you know.
Bobalooey with the Teen Titans. I think
Secret Squirrel, yeah, yeah, Secret Squirrel Grayson, somebody said. I thought that was good.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, just, I'm excited. It's fun. Not often do I get excited when I just see something like that. Most time it's like, eh, whatever. You know, we'll see how it is. Yeah. But when I saw the Banana Split Suicide Squad, I just went,
that was enough.
Brilliant.
Just brilliant and ridiculous. That image.
I don't even remember who's doing it.
The first image I saw was the other, was Space Ghost.
Yeah, with their fists out. Yeah,
and well, I was like, as soon as I saw that, I'm like, okay, I don't need to see anything else. I want this book.
First one I saw was Doc Shaner had posted the image of, it was the, Adam Strange lifting up the
Johnny Quest. And Haji.
I'm like, what is this?
I thought it was a joke. Yeah. I'm like, they can't be serious.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, then they announced it. Yeah. Did I show you guys that Johnny, the Doc Shaner Superman image? Oh,
yeah, where he was just screwing around.
Oh.
Yeah, that's him screwing around.
Yeah.
It's people who don't realize what talent they have.
He knows. He gets paid for it.
He gets paid,
but that was him screwing around with a tablet, just going, hey, let's try. You know, oh, jeez. Yeah, okay, sorry. Oh, well, that was a good diatribe on Hanna-Barbera.
Yeah, so that's all I got for news.
Not super news, but the sales charts released end of last week. And Marvel is back on top, and it was just kind of funny. I don't want to get into a total breakdown of it, but definitely some Marvel shenanigans going on as far as, like, they dominate market share and all this stuff, and I'm like, I don't know about this. I know that, like, the number 10 book was IVX, where we had a 50% overship, so it's like, okay, that's a little sketchy, and some of their other books, you know, Venom was there, Spider-Man Renew Your Vows, I'm like, okay, well, both of those had 1 in 1,000 variants and deep discounts and all sorts of stuff.
And you working directly with Bleeding Cool to uncover the truth.
No, I just, I asked them, I just pointed some stuff
you're
out
like
to them.
You're like a field reporter.
No, because Bleeding Cool
Inside
is the only
man,
one.
Colin McMahon, cool.
Bleeding Cool's the only one that actually does report on, you know, the fact that Loot Crate affects it. And, you know, they reported that Champions had Scholastic in there. And I just looked at some things, and one thing I noticed that I thought was really odd was in the top 50 books, Marvel had 9 titles in there that were not number one. And 3 of those titles were Star Wars books. So in the top 50, they had 6 ongoing series in the top 50. That's not good. So Ryan Higgins from Comic Conspiracy out in California pointed out that Uncanny X-Men is at 77 on the sales chart.
Wow.
That's not good. That's very, very bad. That's a top 20 book. That has to be a top 20 book. You know, it should be. You know, you expect Justice League to be high. Uncanny X-Men is real. You know, Avengers should be up there, which it's not. But he just happened to point that out, and it's like, wow. 77.
Is Justice League still up there?
It's up there. I'd say it's...
it shouldn't be.
It shouldn't be, but it's selling well through...
I think it's like people like us that are like, okay, I'm just waiting for this to get good, and we haven't jumped off that.
I read... this last week's issue, and I think I might jump off into
really.
It'll show you a non-tech.
It's not terrible, but it's not good, and I'm just not enjoying it. And why buy it every
week? If I'm buying 17 books a week, I want to
really
read
close.
What I want to read.
That's
yeah.
money in the drawer, not so much.
Okay. No, I understand that. And I bought it, and just there was 3 books I didn't get to, and that was one of them.
Yeah.
Was kind of intentionally, because as I'm like, I'm going through my pile, I'm like, all right, I'll put that
yeah,
back.
Like I read it last night as a, I have to read this book.
Which one?
Justice League.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And it shouldn't be a chore.
No, it should be the best book.
It should be. And I think they have the wrong people on it. No offense.
All offense.
It's not awful.
As my son
like,
would
it's
say.
Not, it's not terrible.
No, but
it's just very
we went
much
from Jeff
middle,
Johns
it's
to
very
Hitch,
much just
who's
middle
not,
of the road.
Not Johns.
Yeah. Okay, here's the sales chart. So, like, the top 2 were Batman, then you had Civil War, okay, and then All-Star Batman, then Invincible Iron Man, which I know had a big push behind it, Spider-Man Renew Your Vows, Batman Annual, Venom, Walking Dead, and IVX.
So you had 2 events... Because I'm assuming you're counting IVX.
Justice League is 12
event.
And 13 on the chart. Number 11 was Avengers, but we're going to see. But then here was the reason that I mentioned it. I was emailing Bleeding Cool. with Marvel doing all the overshipping. So I received more Avengers 2 than I ordered. And it's going to show up higher on the sales chart because of that. I just noticed on this week's invoice, we had some more of that going on.
But here's what I don't get. So they... Okay. Market share, I get, because they're overshipping.
Right.
But then dollar share... should be dropping because no one's paying for those copies.
The opposite
is happening.
The argument is that people that chase the variants who make enough money off the rare variant to justify spending all the money on unsold copies help bump the shares.
Plus, you also have to remember all their books are $1 more.
Yeah, $1
more. Okay, yeah.
So you can sell however percentage less.
They shipped 20 more books than DC did during that month. I think it was like 138 to 118.
Yeah.
And then as Colin pointed out, anything they have that's in a subscription box is an actual purchase through Diamond.
Right. I don't think it's considered sold for a quarter. I think it gets the full number.
I don't think it's the full number. I think the discount applies.
Okay. I don't know. But that was the one thing that Rich Johnson said in his article. And when he was arguing with Brevoort was your market share should be... Not equal to, but your percentage beating DC market share should be dollar share, and it's not. The dollar share is a lot less.
Well, I could always see their dollar share being 25% more because their books are 25% more.
Right, but it's not.
Yeah.
So, but like Infamous Iron Man, I'm getting the same amount of number 3 that I ordered of number 2, even though I didn't order that same amount of 3 because number 2 didn't sell as well. Rocket Raccoon, I'm getting double what I ordered, so it's going to show up on the unit sales chart twice as high as it was. And then both Star Wars 26 for some reason and Hulk number 1, I'm getting a 50% extra of my order. So it's just, you know, I think it's just, you know, purely to affect the sales chart, which is, I think, is a little hinky, and it makes you look at the numbers. And now, sadly, you can't just look at the top ones going, you know, number ones, you know, they have the extra variants and stuff. And also, they normally do, like, the deep discount. If you order a ridiculous amount, you save, and sometimes you can get a ridiculous amount for less than a normal amount.
Yeah.
I think Ryan actually talked about this on his last podcast, where it may be something where, you know, the way Marvel's set up with the printer, they're printing 10 million comics way or another, so they've got to do something with these comics. They don't want them sitting in a warehouse.
Right, it could be. I remember he said something about one of them. There may be a print floor, like they have to print at a minimum number, and on some of these, that may have come up. I don't remember which.
I'd have a hard time thinking, like, Star Wars, that would be a problem.
I know, so I don't understand, unless it's a new story arc that they're trying to bump up.
I don't know.
I'm just trying to look at some of their bottom numbers that they may have overshipped.
Like you said, like, Deadpool the Duck was one of them.
But I'm getting one extra copy, which I don't understand... That doesn't make sense to me at all.
Well, no, it does make sense, though, because then what they're going to do is announce it was a sellout.
Well, they're going to sell out anyway.
Well, no, but they're going to announce it was a sellout because they got rid of everything.
Sorry. Scooby Apocalypse is 2 spots under Captain America Sam Wilson and 4 spots under Totally Awesome Hulk. That makes me happy. It's not just here it's doing well. It's doing well.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't want to necessarily say well. It's 22,000 copies, but
does that mean it has Marvel going ro-ro?
That cracks me up that it's doing. Hey, okay, here we go. New Superman outsold Gwenpool. That makes me happy. And that's beyond. That's not returnable. So, just made me laugh. And here, like Great Lakes Avengers. Is much higher than it should be because they sent us... Yeah, they're at 100, but they sent us 50% more.
Yeah, but Marvel's going to say that's because it does gangbusters over in China.
Could be. I did enjoy that Doctor Strange Sorcerer Supreme was a top 5 book in October because it was in the loot crate, and now it's down to 99. That's a fairly big drop from like 200,000 copies to 29,349 copies.
Right, but if you take out the loot crate thing, then how many copies would have been the original order?
Exactly.
So it probably didn't drop that much, other than the fact that Loot Crate got involved.
Yeah. No, I hear you. But it's interesting seeing it down where it should be. Ooh, Mother Panic did well. Number 64 at 41,000. Sorry, I know this is riveting.
What Marvel books is that near?
Mother Panic? Yeah. No, it is returnable. Avengers 1.1, Infamous Iron Man number 2. Old Man, a little bit below Old Man Logan, Poe Dameron.
None of those are top tier books though that I'd be concerned about. I mean, Infamous Iron Man, that's essentially a Doctor Doom book, so whatever. The 1.1 book, the Avengers 1.1, that has a very niche market.
But you also have to wonder, was it ordered like an Avenger, you know, did people know what they were ordering? So just interesting. Batman TMNT Adventures number 14. Was it 14? Now, that was returnable if you ordered enough.
Really?
Yeah.
That was one of those books I thought was going to sell out.
Maybe they over... Well, it did. It went to second print.
Yeah.
But that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I'm just surprised that with returnability that one went... Well, that might be why it went.
Well, remember, selling out doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, it has to be sell through.
Right.
And I think I mentioned it.
I did. I sold out. But I don't know if I ordered enough for return... Well, I think I did order enough for returnability, but... I didn't know how to order, because, like, I was selling through 50 copies of the first one. And I didn't have it, with the animated versions of both, I knew it wasn't going to sell as well. But then this one comes out with animated Harley on the cover, it's like, jerks.
Yeah, you know it's going to...
You know that's going
to
sell well.
Yeah, it is a cool cover.
But getting back to, I was just talking to Bleeding Cool, just saying, hey, you know, there's shenanigans going on here, and I thank you for... What I initially asked him for, if he would do something where he would revisit the sales charts.
Yeah.
Like something like Doctor Strange, plug in the number for what number two actually sold, add even 50% for what number one should have been, instead of it showing, you know, a 90% drop, just a smaller drop, and seeing where the sales charts would have played, where the numbers would have played. You know, Marvel's market share really was this, if you take out these things with questionable provenances type thing.
Now, what does DC do? Because DC has a collector's core, whatever they call it, box as well.
Yeah. They might. I don't know.
Well, here's the thing. Boxes only count if the orders go through Diamond. So it might be for Marvel's own and DC's own. They don't go through Diamond because they're getting it for themselves.
Well, no, but the Doctor Strange was in the Marvel box. So clearly.
But I thought that Bleeding Cool said, though, that it was just like Loot Crate, where they have to buy through the distributor. That it shows up in the sales.
Maybe.
Sales numbers.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's clear that Loot Crate is on the charts because Big Trouble in Little China was the number one book of the year. I think I sold one copy.
I think it was like 500,000 copies.
Yeah, so nobody sold any of those. That was a Loot Crate. And it's like, sorry guys, you need to weed those out. They have no place in this.
Yeah, those are outliers.
Well, the problem is the point of the sales chart is to show where things are selling relative to one another. That's really the only reason for it. So when you have these huge disparities, you know, that one's selling 500,000 copies, well, gosh, and then number two is going to sell 15,000 copies, so what, that number one number doesn't mean anything. And that's my point about it. It's just if you show me apples to apples, hey, you know, Aquaman's doing better than Spider-Man or whatever it might be, that is interesting, that is newsworthy, that's of note. Showing something did well because of, you know, shenanigans, does it really matter? You know, all of a sudden they're going to see a huge bump in, you know, Star Wars number 26 is going to sell better than any Star Wars book since number one. Well, okay.
They decided to send free copies.
Yeah, because they send everybody 50% more.
For some weird reason.
Yeah, so.
That might be the Yoda story or something.
Maybe. I don't know.
I don't know.
But it just is shot, odd.
But I don't know.
Yeah, but even if it is, I mean...
I'm not going to sell 21 more copies than I did of 25. You know. So, that's all my rant.
I think Colin just wanted to say shenanigans.
Shenanigans.
I'm not saying shenanigans. It's a very good... Well, it's from South Park. You know, I'm calling shenanigans.
It's not from South
Park. Yeah,
no, but well my before, use of it and my thinking of it in is, hey, I'm calling shenanigans.
An old Gaelic word.
Right. No.
My grandmother used to say
it. I don't know why. I heard you just say, I'm Colin Shenanigans, like your new stage
name. I'm David S. Pumpkins.
S apparently stood for shenanigans.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I got. It's not a rant, just a newsworthy note.
No.
That's all. By the way, Festivus has begun, so case you don't make it all the way to the end, because who knows where this is going, but please check the website daily, or Facebook or Twitter, where I'm posting the Festivus sales.
How have the sales done so far?
I sold one book today. Today I had 25% off all omnibus, absolutes, library editions, artist editions, all the big ticket, gift type items, and I sold one. So
I liked your sale yesterday.
Yeah, nobody took advantage of that.
I plan on coming in, but
oh, the snow did.
Yeah, the snow.
I can't plan around that.
No, I know.
Neither
could the weather guy, because he didn't say we were going to get hit like that. And,
they never do. Or they'll say we're going to get hit like that, and then we get nothing.
Right.
Did your deep discount daily sales do anything? The Harley Quinn statue and the
I sold one garage. Harley last week, not on the day, but somebody asked if I was... Actually, I sold another one today. Somebody asked if I would still do it, and I said yeah. I'm just trying to... This is the day when I'm going to have people here in the store.
How many of those things did you have?
I had a lot.
Oh.
I went a little overboard. That was part of the reason for deep discounting them. It wasn't that deep. The motorcycles are really cool, but they take up a lot of space. And I have an extra Harley, especially a spare. So it's like, they need to go. So that was why I discounted them. And to be honest with you, if you come in any time between now and Christmas and offer me $200 for either of them, I'll take you up on it. So
that's a big discount. It regular is. Cost is $350, right?
$350?
Yeah.
$350.
So, yeah, it's just one of those things I think of. I'm like, hey, let's try this. Because I don't want to sell the brand new stuff that we have coming in at a discount, but they've been here too long. I'll keep doing that. I meant to do it every day, and life gets in the way, and I forget. Sometimes when I forget to get the list up in time and the podcast. That's a lot of Tim. Not to blame Tim, but most Thursdays I was behind the counter, and it was easy to get everything done. And then when Tim comes in and lets me out onto the floor to do other things.
Mm-hmm. You're not behind the counter.
I tend to forget that I needed to, finish the podcast or get the what's coming next.
Fire Tim.
No, it's not Tim's fault. It's just I get onto other things. So that's it. That's all I have to talk about. Anybody else have anything? Concerns, questions, comments?
Dave, how's life?
New job. Dave is saying it was awesome.
You don't want to hear my rant.
Interviewed the Pope yesterday, so no.
I'm working on it.
Are you good?
Interviewed the Pope. Meh.
Meh. He's okay. Short.
That's why he wears a big hat.
True. Well, this one doesn't, though.
No.
Who was it? I think it was...
JP2?
No. Someone did a... it was Carlin. Dennis Leary.
Oh, okay.
Was, that's how you can tell what the rank is. Priests wear no hats, and then cardinals wear beanies. The Pope has Carlin, a hat. Yeah. No, it was Dennis Leary because it was God must have a giant sombrero. Oh,
okay.
Now you just offended Dave. Way to go.
I'm Catholic. I was an altar boy, if you can believe it.
No, I can't.
That explains.
I was. No, actually, never was. I was a Boy Scout. Never happened. It completely has destroyed my self-esteem.
Sorry. Way to go, Josh. Why do you bring that up?
That's why I don't go to bike shops either.
Brutal. Okay, so.
What'd you read, Pat?
I was going to say, how about we get off, Pat? Oh, wait.
Hey, now.
Let's not go down that road for the podcast again. We had enough of that last week.
Mm-mm-mm. Oh, okay, so I guess you do want me to go
first. Yeah, why not?
All right.
I read five.
So. I'll start in the middle here. Ninjak, which I got specifically because of the cover, the cat cosplay cover.
I do want to say the cat covers have been outstanding. And Kevin Bastos came in yesterday. I was officially notified by Valiant. Actually, Matthew Klein emailed me to let me know that Kevin had won. And they'll be sending me a check to cover his purchases for 2017. So he came in and I mentioned that to him, and then I showed him the cat covers, and he went back and got all the cat covers.
The cat covers are fantastic. Yeah. The only cat cover that I did not get so far was Faith.
Okay.
Yeah, that one I was not.
Yeah, and I like the character design cover for that one instead. So, but the rest have been fantastic.
Yeah.
Britannia today.
Britannia was my favorite of all. In the little Roman centurion outfit.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
I'm such a fan. Too. Yeah, Wrath with the little battle axe and everything. Mm-hmm. I thought that was brilliant. but
it doesn't take
you
much
picked
to get
a good issue
of
Ninjak to jump onto because it was the start of a brand new arc, but it was a very unique issue because it was mostly silent
to the very end, and it was the art was great.
Oh, it was fantastic.
So good.
They did such a good job of showing a very kinetic, you know, fight with him like trying to make his way to Roku and fighting through all of these, you know, hordes of cultish monks.
And that's what I was trying to figure out, is why the hell do we have all these Buddhist monks in Las Vegas? Because I've been to Vegas. There's no Buddhist temples. What the hell?
You can find anything in Vegas, Pat.
That's true.
That's true. Maybe I just didn't look hard enough for the Buddhist temples. But, yeah, no, I thought that was really, really, really cool issue. I don't know who Roku is. I don't know if that's someone I should know. Like, I knew they had the beginning... Yeah. That's actually the first thing I thought of, and I'm like, that can't be right.
Roku was his
looked like
handler
his lover
when
or
he first
like
got into MI6, and she was kind of training him, and they ended up having a relationship, and then there was an attack, you know, where they were at, and he thought that she was dead, and found out that she was actually captured and taken to the Bleeding Monk's temple, and she was brought back to life, but with these abilities and very changed, and she had to go through kind of hell to, you know, crawl her way back out of these, you know, trials, and he went there also and didn't realize that she was there, and then tried to, you know, when Roku showed up and they finally realized that they did know each other, she went through great efforts to ruin his life. She's the one that got him like blacklisted with MI6 and caused him to lose his fortune, destroyed his home, found his parents and killed them. Like, it's, yeah.
Okay.
It's been building up between them. But he still, now that he knows who she is and that he loved her and was torn up when she got killed, kind of, I think her death is also what kind of turned him into the cold operative that he is now.
Okay.
He still kind of wants to, you know, save her, I think. But it's definitely coming to a head.
No, that was a really cool issue.
Yeah.
She
has razor hair.
Okay.
But it was really good. I like a good silent issue.
Yeah.
Clearly the writer, you know, wrote a solid story for the artist to depict, but when it can almost completely be told just through the art, and you get all the emotion, everything's conveyed properly, it works really well.
Yeah, and it's just like, they didn't have to have the dialogue at the end.
No.
It still would have worked without it.
Yeah. But it was perfect. It said a little bit of dialogue worked very well. Mm-hmm. It was great.
Moon Knight
was good.
Moon Knight, so... What's essentially going on is Mr. Knight is getting or attempting to get rid of these other facets of his personality. And as he confronted each one, they kind of turned into dust and blew away mm-hmm. until he got the Mark Spector.
No, until he got the Stephen.
That's right, Stephen Grant, who he said, you know, that's been him the longest.
Yeah.
You know, and he kind of, where the other ones were a little more combative, Steven willingly kind of went away.
After he ran first, though.
Yeah, but that was, the other ones wanted to fight, whereas he, you know, he wanted to preserve himself, and then, you know, he realized, I guess, that he would remain.
Yeah.
The whole key thing is he had to gain control of these other aspects of his personality in order to move forward. And now he's going to get Khonshu. So, it's just been excellent. I think we did a okay job of describing what's going on.
Yeah, and the great thing about this is it was engaging, but at no point would we have had any guess on where it was actually going to end up going.
No.
So that I think it was really well done in telling this very, you know, abstract story about his different personalities, but keeping the reader off guard the entire time, mm-hmm. or catching the reader off guard with each book. And it was really good. I did miss the you know, various artists in this issue.
Yeah,
it was nice seeing, you know, like Frank and V and company.
Yeah.
draw for each of the different personalities.
Yeah, and I think that's a cool technique to use, mm-hmm. but, you know, this worked fine. Dr. Aphra, number one. Dave, did you read that?
I did read that.
What'd you think?
I liked it. I liked it overall. Okay.
I like the backup story better than I like the main story.
Yeah.
The backup story was essentially how she got her PhD because she cheated to get it. And you see how she did. Whereas the main story was very Indiana Jones-esque at the beginning.
That's what I thought, too, since I read that the beginning there.
I was waiting for, like, a big boulder to go rolling after him and all that.
Yeah, throw me the... throw you the whip. Out of Raiders.
And then when she goes to sell this artifact, they find out that her PhD had been suspended for some reason. We don't know what that is. But that's why I think they did the backup so you could find out kind of the circumstances that she got it to begin with. And at the very end of the main story, she runs into her father, who essentially says, "Well, you're lucky I'm the one that found out that you were cheating and not someone else."
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting. Obviously, you know, the stuff with the droids is funny. They kind of go off and kill some people without permission yet again.
She's like 000, 000's the 3PO one, right? I mess up the names.
Yeah, I think BT.
Yeah, because the other one's BT.
Right, yeah. BT, yeah. He's like, you know, there's a lot of things droids shouldn't do. I rarely let that stop me. I mean, the characters are just so good as original characters created for a comic book, Dr. Aphra and the droids.
And the evil Wookiee.
And the evil Wookiee. It's great.
It's Black Caligar or something like that. It's some weird.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he's a... I like where this can be headed. I'm just hoping that it kind of goes in the appropriate direction. She doesn't need to run into Boba Fett or leave her off, keep playing with the droids and let them, you know, go off and do things on the side. I think that this could be a good book.
It'll take some doing to get a good story out of this, but I think it can be done for sure.
Yeah.
Hopefully it heads that way.
Nightwing.
Bloodhaven.
Yeah, so this focused on Dick's return to Bloodhaven. He gets a... It's not even a job, it's an internship.
Like a community outreach.
Yeah, a community outreach type program. And I like how... They did, you know, she asked why he wanted to do it, and he goes through this long 2-page spiel, and then we find out, but that's not what I actually said instead. Because when I first read it, I'm like, he was giving away everything, and I'm like, this can't be happening.
No, that was good. My only problem with that section of the book is the pages were just, like, super white. Like, it just...
Yes, it was threw color me off. Really...
It threw me off the art there, because it was... Like, white
borders. Well, it wasn't
borders.
The art, though. It was the coloring.
Yeah,
and I'm not blaming the color.
The art was fine. It just...
It was a much brighter palette than the rest of the book. It didn't match.
Yeah, it just felt off. To the point where it kind of, like, took me out of the story for a little bit there.
Yeah. But, yeah, I thought this was good. What I really liked was the first part where it was Robin and then, to me, my Titans, and then Batgirl walks up behind him. I thought that was pretty good. And just her interaction with you know, why isn't Dick here? Well, because you told him you didn't want to see him.
Yeah.
I always
love Damian's interactions with the rest of the family.
Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, his whole... He's just a dick.
Mm-hmm. A lovable dick.
Yeah. But, you know, a dick nonetheless. So, mm-hmm. that's... I thought it was good, and I'm glad that they returned him to Bloodhaven.
Yeah,
Let
him be Nightwing without
being in the shadow of Batman
with the other characters.
Superman.
I forgot to read this one
with Frankenstein.
Oh, this was great.
This was outstanding.
I had to think about it for a second. Like, yeah. Did I read this?
Yeah, it was because the cover really was Frankenstein ripping his shirt open. He had a big red ass.
Yeah.
So Frankenstein. Well, no, it starts off with Lois at the Hamilton Gazette or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Talking to the editor.
They want her to work on this investigative story for them.
And then all of a sudden, Frankenstein busts through the wall like the Kool-Aid man and is ready to kill the editor. Yeah. So Lois runs and, you know, tries to save the editor.
They
the
steal
editor.
Frankenstein's, like, hover vehicle.
Yeah, his hover bike or whatever. And Superman shows up. They fight for a bit. And then at the very end, Frankenstein is able to get a hold of this editor and cuts her face off, and we find out she's not human.
Yeah.
Which is kind of what he had been saying the whole time, and no one was believing him or listening to him.
But it was good. It was kind of funny. Like, there's some nice humorous parts to it. I think Doug Mankey did the art on this
yes,
one.
Yes, he
was,
did.
It was fantastic.
I'm a huge fan of Mankey's art, though.
Yeah, it was really good. Just a really good issue. As all the issues of
this Superman has been killing it.
Yeah. I can't say enough. Such a huge turnaround on this character's books. I mean, DC should be proud of what they've done to make him and bring him back to being a, you know, book or character that people are looking forward to reading every, you know, every other week.
Yeah. And you know, action's fine, but I look forward to reading Superman.
Yeah, action's good. There's nothing wrong with action at all.
No, but Superman jumps to the top
Superman
of my pile.
Superman proper is incredible.
So Batman.
This was good.
I
liked it.
I didn't
this
really like it.
This arc has been all over the place.
Yes.
I like this issue. I don't know if I love the whole, like, narration style with his like kind of letter.
He's writing
to Selena.
A letter to Selena, and that's
It wasn't bad, but I didn't love that. But what I did love was the art, and especially like the action or the motion being depicted.
Yes.
Like when he's scaling the fortress.
My only problem with that is he's scaling the thing all the way up, and then he jumps down into the water. It's like, why would you climb all the way to the top of the building just to then jump
he's
down?
Batman.
I get that, but
well, that you can't ask that question. The answer is
it just seemed like a lot of effort. Because
he's Batman.
It would have been easier to jump in the water from down low.
The only thing that didn't make sense to me is, why does he have to go through all that in the first place? Because didn't the last issue end with him up in the rafters above them anyways?
Yeah, that's what I thought, unless this was showing
but
him
it was almost
up.
Like, this was almost like prose with illustrated prose.
But no, it's for an arc that has had several ups and downs, this is one of the better issues, I think.
It's just, I feel like we still don't know what the hell is going on here. And we're four issues into the arc. We should at least have some idea what's going on. I mean, I know he's there to get Psycho Pirate, but, you know, what's...
Maybe Psycho Pirate's making things weird. We don't understand. We're victims of Psycho Pirate.
Oh, damn it. The issue went meta.
Yep. So, hey, when it happens.
Yep. The Walking Dead... I think I'm the only one here that reads that.
Buff Carl. Sorry, just in the variant cover.
Coral?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, totally ripped.
I like the mid-season finale.
I love the mid-season finale.
I thought you stopped watching the show.
No.
I feel like this season has been pretty damn good so far.
Yes and no. The stuff with Negan, yes. The rest, not so much.
Oh, I thought the other stuff was fine. The stuff with Negan's the best.
But. Yeah. Oh, well, no, I take it back. The stuff in the kingdom where he had Ezekiel, I really liked that, too. Because Shiva, I just thought that was awesome how they brought a tiger on TV. But the stuff with Negan, especially in this episode, I thought was great. And it was straight out of the comic with him killing Spencer. I brought him home. I fed him spaghetti. His interaction with Rick was great. Jeffrey Dean Morgan was a brilliant get.
He's fantastic.
But no, I'm enjoying that very much. But in this, in the comic, the Whispers are falling back after attacking the hilltop. We find out that the Saviors are essentially plotting against Rick Now that, Dwight has left and is not the leader anymore, but what they're waiting for is the Whispers to weaken kind of the alliance between Rick, the Hilltop, and the Kingdom. And then they'll go in and pick them off at the end. So, what I will say for is it's in a lot of ways it's not exactly like All Out War, but in some ways it is. Luckily, it's moving faster than All Out War. Yeah, All Out War drug out the 12 issues.
It feels like the same thing. Like I haven't read any of this, but it sounds like it's the same thing over again.
It, and in a lot of ways, it is. It's, you know, just a new group that they were with.
Do you feel it's time to wrap this book up?
I don't know if it's time to wrap the book up. I think it's time to take it into a different direction, though. Because I like how they started the arc after All Out War, where it was 2 years later, there was trade going on, all that. I mean, I don't expect a happy ending. That's probably unlikely in this scenario anyway. But I think there's other things you can do than bring in a group for them to war with.
Are the zombies even a threat anymore in this?
They are. Like, the Whisperers are using zombies as cover and as weapons. I think they would have rotted away by now. Well, yeah, I mean, that's just like in the winter, they should freeze. In the summer, they should rot faster. You know, none of that really happens. But I, you know, for me, that's one of the issues. Just find something else for them to do other than just going to war with a different group, or, you know, even a war amongst themselves. There has to be other, you know, supplies can get. There's other things you can do to add drama without it having to kind of be. And it's similar to the TV show. They separate, they get back together, they separate, they get back together.
Yeah, it just was like, you know, this many issues in that maybe he is out of unique things to tell.
And that, you know, that could be. There's also, and they didn't hit it in this issue, there's another group somewhere that Eugene is talking to via radio. I'm guessing that's going to come into play at some point. You know, I doubt he would touch on that for three or four issues without something coming with that, but that would be nice to see, you know, maybe something a little more long range. I'm trying to kind of, you know, expand what they're doing, you know, because that would raise all kinds of different issues as well. So that would be nice to see, just as something different. But it's not a bad book. I mean, I'm not like, you know, it's one of those books I look forward to reading. Green Arrow.
Yeah, I read this. The, start of the Emerald Outlaw arc.
Yeah.
This has more of like a, Robin Hood vibe to it. And I saw an interview with, the writer, his name Ben Percy, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And he even said that he kind of wanted to, like, give it a bit of a feel. So, like, we have the officer Notting, who's supposed to be, like, Sheriff Nottingham, and Green Arrow has his new base of operations. It's kind of like a giant treehouse out in the woods outside of the city.
Lives with the Ewoks.
Yeah. Yeah. Like a mix of a treehouse and Ewok village.
Yup, mm-hmm. Yup, dumb.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And clearly he's being set up by somebody.
Yeah, someone's trying to frame him for these different murders, and he's also trying to still, you know, possibly gain control of his company again. Yeah.
It's not Queen Consolidated, though. It's Queen Industries or something like that. Yeah.
Against the urging of Black Canary to just leave that alone and to, you know, start his new life. Yeah.
Yeah, I've enjoyed this book.
It's been a great book. This is another one of those books that every, you know, issue that comes out has been a solid issue. I can't think of a single bad issue we've had so far.
No. Green Lantern.
This is good. This has been the fun Green Lantern's book.
Yeah.
It had a rocky start in that first arc, but it's gotten pretty solid lately.
In this, the Phantom Lantern kind of loses control of his emotions. He's he goes to Volthoom and essentially...
I like seeing Volthoom kind of, like, you know, slap him down and say,
hey,
you need
dummy,
to get...
Yeah, you get control of that. Yeah. Don't let it get control of you. And so he goes back to fight Simon and Jessica again and uses fear, their greatest fears against them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's that he's unworthy and she's just afraid of everything. Yeah. Although at the
only thing I don't like, I feel like that point has been driven home a bit too many times in this series.
Although what I like, though, is now he's actually using, you know, the yellow fear against them.
Yeah.
Which, it's a different way of doing it. I get it's kind of the same
weapon.
It definitely
makes sense to do that in this arc. It's just...
Maybe
Sam
not Humphrey, so much.
Sam Humphries has you know, pointed this out to us several times now.
Yeah.
So even though it makes sense to do it here, he's kind of already... you know, soured us to that idea.
But
that's a minor gripe.
No, it is. And I've enjoyed this arc. I think it's been pretty good. Finally, I got Aquaman.
I really like this issue.
I did too.
Yeah, this book... again, another book that had a bit of a shaky start at the beginning of the series, I think. Not that much.
I would say I've enjoyed... The only issue that I thought was a little off was the one where he was in jail the whole time.
Just some of the issues seemed a bit... out there, like, tone-wise. And
okay.
And I wasn't liking the art at first.
Okay.
But I think the book is kind of come to its own.
Found its way, yeah. In this... Atlantis is being blamed for starting a war with the U.S. If it's not them, it's Nemo.
Yeah,
but
Nemo is targeting different cities, and they rush in, they hit their target, then they pull back in the water, then move down the coast to a different target.
Plus, they're using stolen Atlantis and tech and monsters.
Yeah.
So that it really does look like it's Atlantis doing it.
The president, U.S. president, declares war on Atlantis. And Aquaman decides to only use their forces in defense of Atlantis, and only if they're fired upon upon first.
And then the Justice League shows up at the end.
Yeah, that's the one thing I didn't care for though, is because
this seems like this whole thing could be avoided with a simple phone call.
Yeah, and in one of the other books, I think it's actually in Deathstroke. Superman, he's talking to a government official and makes a point of saying that he's not keen on working, you know, with the government right now after they almost cost him a friend and a teammate with his, you know, by getting involved with their issues with
Finland.
Aquaman.
Okay.
So then to see them all come busting in here at the end and him saying, I gave you a chance, like, why wouldn't you talk to him first?
Yeah, that's the part that it's like a simple phone call could have fixed.
And it doesn't 90%. It doesn't come across as believable to me that they would approach it that way.
No, and the other thing, Batman would have been all on top of this. He probably knows about Nemo. He probably has a membership card. You know, that part's a little out there. Or Cyborg. They're using, you know, radio communications. Mm-hmm. They're using computers. Cyborg should have been able to hack that. Or, you know, he should have been able to hear traffic to know what's going on. So there's just a couple flaws in that whole thing that I found a little strange.
Yeah, but otherwise it was a good issue. It was cool seeing Arthur kind of like in crisis management mode.
Yeah.
You know, I like that in the very beginning, like, tell me yes or no, is this us?
Right, yeah. Yeah, it was very cinematic in the way he did it.
Yeah,
I mean,
it was. No, this has been good.
That's all I got.
Did you read Justice League?
I didn't get to it. You can spoil it.
Yeah, there's not much I'm going to spoil. I don't hate this book. I don't really like this book either. Tone-wise, just does not feel like the characters. That's the biggest issue I have. With it. So they are seeking out who's responsible for, like, this computer virus that, you know, they think tried to kill them. And they go to this guy's house who has lost his wife, and she was lost during that previous arc when people were all kind of mind-controlled.
Okay.
and he's been working in his basement or in his garage on something, and his kids think that he may have been involved, and the Justice League thinks
he's
involved.
Yeah, I remember that. That's what they talked about in the last issue.
Yeah, and he's saying that, you know, he was going to do something to kind of steal money from the, you know, people like Lex Luthor and Bruce Wayne and give it to people that were affected by these tragedies who are more in need.
Okay.
But he hasn't done anything yet, and they found out that the daughter was actually using his code for this very advanced search engine that would just, you know, through a series of questions, know what you wanted before you even knew what you wanted.
Oh, so it's Google.
Google on steroids. And also be able to get it for you. And she was calling it Genie because it could almost grant wishes.
Okay.
But somehow it is going beyond its programming, or it's more powerful than she thought. Okay. Whereas she hoped to sell it to a developer and their money issues. It's kind of evolved in a bit. And her little brother's been playing on their iPad with this running on it. And it was asking questions, and he was talking to it about his mom, you know, getting killed, and how the Justice League was involved with it. So it has decided that to grant his wish that it has to eliminate the Justice League. And the one cool thing I will say for this issue is that when this virus released the location of where the Justice League was at to try and get the villains to come and eradicate them, we got to see like a lot of, you know, C-list villains that you don't see too often show up to try and confront
Firefly.
Yeah, like Giganta was there. Like a lot of, you know, villains like
that. Where's Apache Chief?
I didn't see Apache Chief.
El Dorado.
But so that was neat. But just the book has not been good yet. It has not been terrible, but it's just, I don't know if I want to keep buying it every other week.
What did Hitch write prior to Justice League?
Nothing. I think that was the first thing he ever wrote.
JLA.
But that's, I mean...
Right, no, but I mean JLA was the first thing he wrote.
What character did he
write? Unless his personal thing. He did that
some
one.
Image series. Yeah.
But that's what I mean. I would have thought, if I'm giving someone Justice League...
That's a big book.
Yeah. I would have them, you know, start them out with Aquaman, start them out with Green Lantern, see how they write that character, get a feel for the universe before you... Here's all the toys, play with them. That's a lot to manage.
Yeah.
Give him, like, the Adam Strange and Hawkman book, or, I mean...
Well, no, I mean, if you're going to have him... If you're grooming him to write a Justice League book...
But if he's not a writer, have him write something else that's not as, you know, under the spotlight first. Just to see how he is skills-wise.
No, I get that. I mean, even, like, you know, Tom King, who's a great writer, has stumbled a little bit on Batman versus some of the other things he did. I think he's a great writer, but I wouldn't give him Justice League until
he is having trouble finding his voice on a book that is under such scrutiny.
Vision,
no one really, you know, cared much about, so he could do whatever he wanted with.
Yeah, that's fair.
He was on Grayson with Tim Seeley.
Again, that's a book that,
you know, people are scrutinizing, but not to the level of Batman.
Right.
So this is a book where people pick up Vision because they want to read Tom King's book, not necessarily because they said, oh, I want to read a Vision book.
Right, absolutely. Yeah.
Whereas people are picking up Batman because they want to read Batman. They don't care who's writing it.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I just say, you know, for me, let him try one of the characters or two of the characters first and then work his way up. Okay, do a team up. Okay.
Give him the Cyborg book.
Well, yeah, it's give him a Cyborg book. Okay, well, let's add the Flash in a Cyborg book, and let's see how that goes.
Yeah.
Okay, now you can try Justice League. At least understand how the parts work before you have to put them all together.
Yeah, I still think that...
I mean, that's why Johns was so good. He wrote them all. I think
someone else was supposed to write that, and it fell through, and he was able to jump in because he was doing that JLA book. They thought, well, maybe he's from Earth of Characters. He was doing this kind of obscure
Read that book. And I don't mean to be an ass about it. It's not horrible.
But even that's the thing. But it's not that great. Book was never straight up bad, from my understanding. I didn't read the JLA book. I read the first issue.
But it wasn't good.
It wasn't good. But yeah, we'll see. We'll see if maybe it can start to pick up. But I'm losing confidence in it changing from anything other than what it currently is. Dead Man, Dark Mansion, Forbidden Love, number 2 of 3. Okay. Any of you guys read that? I know Tim was reading it.
I think you have a wrong number.
So this is a double-size book. It comes out every other month.
Okay.
The art is fantastic. The story is very almost like noir feeling.
Okay.
But it's really good.
Dead Man?
Yeah.
Okay.
This has Dead Man is kind of trapped in this mansion of sorts, and they're trying to solve this mystery behind this spirit who is also trapped there. And there's this woman, Bernice, who was living in the mansion as her husband was finishing up a novel, and she can see and communicate with Dead Man and this other spirit. So they're all kind of trying to work to figure out this mystery behind this woman's death and what happened to her. But no, this has just been a really good miniseries. It's a nice, the book feels like a solid issue worth, the cost of admission, like a nice thick cover stock.
When you say it's a double issue, though, is
like
it?
It's literally two issues.
So it's like two chapters.
Square bound, yeah.
No, but I mean, it's two chapters of this of one story. It's not.
Oh yeah, this is it's essentially a six issue miniseries split into three.
Okay.
Three parts.
Okay, so it's not like a main story and backup.
No. It's chapter one, chapter two. This was chapter three, chapter four.
Okay.
Then on chapter five, chapter six. But no, it's really well done. What else do I have? A&A, number 10. I think Adam's the only other person.
I'm reading it, but I that was another one I just didn't get to.
This is a fun one. They were trying to Andromeda and and Archer were trying to talk to Gub-Gub since he was possessed by that alien.
Yeah.
But halfway through, just as they were getting to the important part, the possession kind of, ended for whatever reason.
Okay.
And at the same time, you have the scientist bear.
Stalin
and,
bear.
Yes, and the Russian commander guy.
Are you listening
guy.
To yourself? Okay, just making sure.
What?
Gub-Gub, scientist Gub bear. Gub, okay.
You read the book, man. It's wacky.
Davy the Mackerel's not in it, but that's
Davy the Mackerel was in it.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah.
Awesome.
He was with that the guy that was that god that is now... They were
a fashion
selling,
designer?
Yeah, they were selling purses at this little fair kind of thing.
Are you listening to yourself?
Okay. You sell it. You sold it to me.
I sell lots of things.
If you think it sounds off the wall, give me my money back. That's right. That's right, comic man. It's just the book is wacky as hell, but it's
a
lot of
fun.
It's a fun book. The art's great. The story does make sense if you're reading it. I wouldn't jump on in the middle of this arc.
You don't know who Gub-Gub is.
But
yeah, if you don't know who Gub-Gub is, you got to find out.
Gub-Gub is the center of everything now because the clones are trying to get Gub-Gub because they think that Gub-Gub was the only successful clone of Armstrong.
Yeah.
And now Gub-Gub is back to just being Gub-Gub again. Except then Archer was going to have a mind meld thing with Gub-Gub. And that got messed up because the bear stole Gub-Gub in the middle. And now Archer
is Gub-Gub.
Archer's mind is trapped in Gub-Gub, and Gub-Gub's mind is trapped in Archer. So, Archer's now Gub-Gub. Yeah.
Faith isn't going to like that.
No. It's a wacky book, man.
It is.
How do you spell Gub-Gub?
G-U-B.
G-U-B. Gub-Gub. Adam's our Gub-Gub. Adam, if you're listening, you're Gub-Gub.
He's not listening.
He doesn't listen.
He hates us.
Yeah. He doesn't hate me. the last one that I want to mention that we haven't talked about, Shade the Change Girl number 3. Did you read that, Colin?
Mm. I'm behind. I'm sorry.
You're behind already.
The first issue of this series was good but kind of confusing.
Yeah.
Issue 2 and issue 3 are doing a much better job of telling a story. I think, which what they had to do, it can be weird, but tell a story, which is one thing I think Doom Patrol is struggling a bit with. They're not really telling a story yet. But we have Shade, not sure why everyone kind of hates her, and she still doesn't have all the memories of the human host that she is taken possession of. So she had this kid kind of tell her what, you know, she had done to everyone, and comes to the realization that she is awful, that she was an awful person, but then thinks that maybe she'll use that to her advantage and kind of, you know, act in the way that this person would have acted who she's inhabited, but she's now starting to give in to the madness that we, you know, was foretold that, that could happen, and is leading to some, you know, possibly dangerous encounters now with people at the school and the circle of people that tried to just let her drown in the first place before, you know, whenever, before Shade ended up having this human's body. But it's really good. The art is gorgeous in this book. It's a very unique looking book. And yeah, it's a nice mix of weird, but also telling an actual story that you can follow, which is nice. And I was half awake when I read Flintstones, so I'm going to leave that for Dave to talk about.
Okay, we'll talk about Flintstones. All right, number six. All
right, Dave, let's talk about it.
This is a good issue. This whole series has been pretty good.
Well, I could have said that part.
But no, this is the end of the world.
As we know it.
As we know it.
I feel fine.
They don't feel too fine. They're all going, all of Bedrock is going crazy with the news that an asteroid's going to hit Earth, hit Bedrock, and wipe everything out. But the interludes, these little interludes in the issue is what made it for me. There's like a conversation between the armadillo bowling ball. The woolly mammoth vacuum cleaner. And the armadillo is like telling him about his day and how he's just terrified because, you know, he rolls down somewhere and hurts himself at hitting these pins, and then he travels through this darkness and he gets to do it all over. Has to do it all over again. And then... sad woolly mammoth, he's, like, sitting behind the door.
It's like the only thing that gets me through it is knowing that my friend Bowling Ball was on the other side of the door.
And he's like, maybe the only meaning in life is what we get from each other. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that is brilliant. That is, like, so deep. And it's a armadillo bowling ball talking to a little woolly mammoth vacuum cleaner. It's ridiculous. But, man, that was good. And then... Mr. Slade invites everybody over to his house for the end of the world, and nobody from Quarry decides to come.
The Carl Sagan scientist guy isn't too concerned about things.
No, he's a little bit of a whack job.
Yeah,
he has like a new abacus.
Mm-hmm. top of the line
that Pebbles and Bam Bam are. Or working there as interns. He says, you don't get paid, you get to be interns. But there's just so much care taken with this book as far as the social commentary and all the background gags when they're in the mall and everything.
I have to reread this issue.
It's really good.
It was an instance where I was half awake, but I really wanted to read it. So I was like, I'm fine. I'm going to start reading it. And as I was reading it, I knew that I was, like, rereading a page multiple times. And I should have, at that moment, said, I'm in no condition to read this book right now. I'm falling asleep. I'm going to put it down. But no, I plowed through it and then put it in my red pile. And
when you read the same paragraph three times and don't understand what it says, time to take a break.
You're right, Dave. When you're right, you're right.
Mm-hmm. That was
Dave's philosophy.
I would just I'm quoting Mr. Brady. I'm quoting Mr. Brady actually from Brady Bunch. Yeah, I am. You told that to Carol one episode. Reggie and Me, number one.
Reggie and Dave, number one.
No, because the first thing we find out, the Me refers to Reggie's dog, Vader.
The dog is telling the story?
Pretty much, yeah. The dog's the narrator, as Hot Dog is the narrator in the Betty and Veronica book.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know that either.
But, yeah, Reggie has this, it's a little wiener dog, Vader, as in Darth Vader.
We don't know.
What?
It's a little wiener dog. I was going to make a joke.
Oh, no.
I decided not to.
Okay. I don't know what, or it's a dachshund then.
Okay.
I should have said that instead of the W word.
And you work for a Christian.
I know.
Catholic.
That's not.
That's like 45 Hail Marys and 200 Our Fathers right there.
I don't think anybody's aware when I'm.
I better not say anything. Ultra Boy, you need to be saying that stuff.
This book, Reggie, let me get back to Reggie and me before I get too much trouble. This is written by Tom DeFalco. He's a former Marvel editor-in-chief, correct? And Reggie, in this issue, he's throwing a party at his house, and everyone, the whole gang's there, and they get a text from Veronica that there's a party going on at the Lodge Mansion. So everybody ditches Reggie. Oh, man. And then...
No wonder he hates them all.
Yeah, so he spends the rest of the issue pulling, well...
Trying to figure out how to burn down Lodge Mansion.
Well, he just pulls practical jokes on everybody because he's so mad. But we get the background. Well, Vader gives some background on Reggie about how, you know, his dad's the editor of the Riverdale newspaper, and his mom's never there for them. So Reggie went to the dog pound to get Vader, so he'd have a friend. And it's funny because Vader, he has the same attitude toward Archie as Reggie does. He hates Archie, but he does like his taste in friends. He does like Jughead. So it was an entertaining issue. We'll withhold judgment because it's going to be tough to make, I mean, Reggie a sympathetic character and still have him be Reggie.
Right.
Which he kind of has to be, which they tried to make him a little sympathetic. He has to be a little bit sympathetic, I think, to carry the series and however long it goes. but I still enjoyed it. Next, let me talk about... there's a series from Boom. Jim Henson's the storyteller.
Mm-hmm. This one's Giants.
This is Giants. So it's a one-shot story in four issues. I guess they're all going to be about different Giants. But this is based on...
Almost their, like folktale type thing.
Yeah, this was based on a... It was a television series in the late 80s. Jim Henson's the storyteller, and it was... They presented different folktales, little-known folktales, fairy tales from different cultures. And this story is called The Peach's Son, and it's about a family... peasant husband and wife who find these peaches, and there's a boy in one of the peaches, and he grows up to be a giant, and the townspeople are afraid of him, and just as they're about to, you get their pitchforks and out, some other people come and they say their town has been overrun with ogres. So Peach Boy decides to take care of the ogres, and in same instance try to get into good graces with the people in his town. And on his way, you know, he meets a monkey and a wolf and a stork who decide to help him, but they have their own motives as to why they want to help him. And when this was done, I looked the story up on Wikipedia, and it's an old Japanese folktale. It's popular, I guess very popular in World War II. And there's even a statue of the guy, the kid's name is Momoratu, and there's even a statue of him and the animals outside the railway station at Okayama.
Okay.
So it was cool. I never heard of this before. So if you want to, I learned something by reading comic books.
What?
I know. It's took a little initiative. Like
they're good for you?
They are very good for you. So,
regardless of what Seduction of the Innocent said.
Exactly.
Nazi. But sorry.
Well, then.
Well, Frederick Wortham.
And last one I'll mention, X-Files Origins, number 4.
Okay.
This is the last issue of this, telling stories of a young Mulder and Scully. Each book, half the book, it's a flip book. So the first one side is Mulder's story, him growing up in Martha's Vineyard, and Scully on the other. The other story, growing up in San Diego, 13 years old. Mulder is investigating something with his friends. They finally find this pilot who crashed, and he's covered with this green goo, and the army shows up with guns, and Mulder finds this a little bit suspicious. That they have guns to search for a downed pilot. And Scully, she's investigating the death of her Sunday school teacher. And she finds out what happened there, and she starts to lose her faith. I won't give this away, but you find out at the end that both Scully and Mulder's fathers have a connection to one of the classic X-Files characters. Okay. I won't give that away. That wouldn't be fair. If anyone out there wants to read this. But the only criticism is the art is really cartoony.
Okay. And yeah, I noticed the one cover is like that.
I thought it would have been better. I think it would have been better if they would have gone more
traditional
artwork. I think it would have played a little bit better. But it wasn't a great miniseries, but the last issue kind of made up for it. And that's all I got.
Okay.
I don't know if you got all yours, Colin. Well, gosh,
somebody's got to read Marvel here, so I did.
I read Moon Knight.
That's okay, fair one. Enough, fair enough. Okay, Avengers 2.
Electric Boogaloo.
No. It's tough. It's a Kang story. It's a time travel story. So it makes it confusing. Plus, there's multiple versions of Kang in it. And in this one starts
Council
off...
Council of Kangs?
Not quite, but this one starts off with all the heroes have been sucked into this, like, limbo by a new version of Kang that we hadn't seen before. And he tells the heroes that Kang has gone back in history and killed them all in their cribs. And he saved them at the last possible second into limbo. But if they leave where they are, they'll die immediately because they don't exist outside of this bubble. And then he kills everyone except Hercules because Hercules, he can't find Hercules' birth in history because it's, you know, he's a god. So Hercules goes and he visits an oracle who is working at some job, and she gives him a medallion to protect himself. And so he goes and he finds the Kang baby. That was the whole thing in issue one where Vision had stolen baby Kang and then hidden him somewhere and then downloaded the information out of his brain so he no longer knew where the baby was hidden, so it couldn't be, he couldn't be forced to reveal it. So Hercules figures out where the baby is. He goes to get the baby and he has this medallion and that protects him. And Kang shows up and they're fighting, and then all the heroes are able to come out of limbo because of this medallion. And then at the end it has the new Wasp character going off, I think, with the baby or something. It was confusing. Time travel is really weird, especially when you have three versions of the same character. And then you also have Mike Del Mundo art, which is very pretty, but is very stylistic. And it was just this isn't a good Avengers book, good mainstream. This would have been a good miniseries. This would have been a good other Avengers book. But for the main Avengers book, it's a little odd. Plus, the Avengers team is Hercules, Falcon, Vision, New Wasp, and Lady Thor. So it's not like...
That's like a West Coast of Avengers.
Yeah, it really is. So it's just...
Great Lakes Avengers.
It's not doing great. It's not selling great, especially like Avengers should be selling.
But that is an Avengers level threat. I mean,
oh, Kang absolutely. But then it gets confusing where you have three different Kangs from three different time periods, and just it's so you know
three different teams of Avengers and one.
Yeah, trying to figure out what's going on is a little tricky. Unworthy Thor was very good. It's Thor meets up with Beta Ray Bill, and then is going and is trying to figure out what happened, and it turns out that Asgard is missing. The Collector has stolen Asgard, not so much because it wants Asgard, but at the end of Secret Invasion, Ultimate Thor threw his hammer and it landed on Asgard. And so, since
Secret Invasion?
Or Secret...
Secret Wars.
Secret War. Secret Wars. So, the Collector wanted the hammer, but he couldn't lift the hammer, so his only option was to steal Asgard. So Thor finds
logical. It seems to be a fatal flaw in Odin's logic.
Thor finds him, and it looks like this is leading into the beginning of that Shi'ar Asgard war. So it was good. It was very good. This is just a mini, but it was good.
Would that work with anything? Like you could just cut a concrete block off and pick up Thor's
way? I don't know. I also read Slapstick number one.
It'd be more effective if you were swinging around the hammer with a big concrete block on the end of it, too.
Yeah. True. But Slapstick number one, which...
I think if you touch the hammer, though, it'll...
I don't quite get the book. My big problem with this book is it didn't explain who Slapstick was, or how he became Slapstick, or anything. There is a moment where he's having dinner with his family, and they're all normal, and he's like this cartoon character, but at no point does it explain how he became this cartoon character or anything. He does, you know, your standard team up with Spider-Man, where Spider-Man's like on a stakeout, and he shows up and botches everything, and then they're trying to do a team up, but then they're fighting, and
it's a Deadpool book without Deadpool.
It was very Deadpool-ish. It exists. It's out there. and then the last one I read was Motor Crush. This one got a lot of play, especially from Bleeding Cool saying that retailers were racist for not ordering it.
So did you take off your hood to read it?
Story of this motorcycle racer. That's what she does. She's like a professional motorcycle racer. But then on the side, she does these like illegal races for this drug called Crush.
Tease for time to read.
And that's basically what it is. It's just racist. This, like, basically motorcycle racing.
It's all about racism.
And drugs, and then at the end it shows her taking this drug that, you know, she shouldn't. So, it was good. It was by the creative team that did the Batgirl from Burnside. So it was good. I ordered enough to get to the returnability, and I didn't sell a lot. So, but I mean, it's going to get some play. It's got a lot of play in the media. So, we'll see how this one goes. So that's all I got.
Tim is very upset right now. Because they just announced that the actress that plays Sasha on Walking Dead is going to be a lead character on the new Star Trek show.
Okay.
Sneakle Martin Green. I guess he can't stand her.
Oh.
Okay.
He said he was happy for a second because he thought it meant that they were going to kill her off on Walking Dead, but then he read the article that said that she'll continue as regular on that show as well.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Sad Tim.
Poor Tim. So coming out next week, it's a strong week. We've needed a strong week. I mean, they've been good. Last week was a little weak. But the return...
My stack feels like it's a strong week.
Yeah, well, remember, this week was a little bit thicker because there was a big insert in most of your DC books.
No, but but when I'm buying 15 books,
right,
that's
no,
not
I get
a
you.
Week.
I get you.
That was with a couple of my books being damaged, not being in my pile.
I'm just more
week.
Overall type of thing. You guys are very strong DC buyers. But next week we have issue 3 of Four Kids Walk Into a Bank, finally. I ordered it in April.
Yay!
Spider-Man number 22, continuing the clone conspiracy. That is actually on my... on my coffee table right now, so I meant to read that. I just didn't get to it. Animosity number 4, which took a real interesting turn last issue. Archie number 15. Avengers 2.1. So
2.1.
At least this one, instead of doing 1.2, they're doing that. Batman, of course, next week. Black Hammer, which is doing great, and I keep selling out of, which I feel bad.
Black Hammer.
Bloodshot USA number 3. Briggs Land for Dave. Cave Carson has a cybernetic eye number 3. I still need to read number 2. Dead Inside. This is a Dark Horse book. Divinity 3 Stalinverse number 1, including the cat cosplay variant. actually highlighted that. Ether number two. Josh, you read that one. That was the Jeff Lemire Ether.
Oh, yeah, I read it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was good.
Gamora number one. I'm going to have plenty.
Because you demanded it.
No, because they sent me lots. Green Hornet, Reign of Doom.
Marvel demanded that he demand it.
Exactly. Harbinger Renegade next week, along with the Cat cosplay variant. He-Man Thundercats number three. Man, is this one selling good. I can't keep it in stock.
Good.
Hookjaw, which is from Titan, which is basically like Jaws. It's like, okay. Invincible Iron Man number two with Riri. Just for Pat, Gem Misfits number one. Justice League number 11 and Justice League Suicide Squad number one. That's starting that one. I believe that's weekly.
Still not going to be as good as Suicide Squad Banana Split.
No, no, I agree. Claws and Witch of Winter one shot is next week.
Oh, nice.
Yes. Snuck that in under the thing. Lock and Key Small World. Not the hardcover, though. The other issues are coming, just not the hardcover. Josh had requested the hardcover.
Sad face.
I'm sorry. Mighty Captain Marvel number zero. Because we needed Mighty in front of that for some reason. Occupy Avengers number two. And this is just for Pat. It's the Power Man and Iron Fist Sweet Christmas Annual.
Sweet.
Punisher number seven is a now, so it's going to have a big number one on the cover. Star Trek Green Lantern volume two number one. Star Wars Dr. Aphra number two. We have Star-Lord number one. Superman 13, and now I really want to read Superman 12. So, it's in my bag.
Gotta read that.
Life got in the way.
A good Frankenstein book.
Thanos number 2. Uncanny X-Men number 16 is a IVX crossover. Tie-in. Venom number 2, and World War X, which I believe is a Titan book, I'm not sure. And then sneaking in just under the wire, X-Files Christmas Special 2016.
Just under that.
Well, I mean, if it showed up next, the week after, it would be late. So, like I said before, check the Festivus sales. I try to do a different sale every day to get people coming. Christmas is right around the corner, so lots of good stuff. I brought up my a lot of my overstock trades that I had down in the basement. They're all out on the table for half off. I've been pricing back issues like crazy to get them out.
I bought one today.
Did you? What'd you buy?
I got Whatever Happened to the Caped Crusader.
Oh, okay. So.
For $7.
Well, whatever happened.
Craziness.
I didn't read it yet, Pat. I just bought it.
Jeez. Lighten up,
Neil Gaiman will tell me in due time.
Yes.
Oh, well, then you're not going to know.
It's like this thick. It's not that big.
Yeah, but it's Neil Gaiman. So
true. I'll be confused.
I think that's mostly what is going on here at the store. So, Dave... Oh, what?
Yeah, double points on
Star Wars. Oh, double points on Star Wars. Star Wars comes out, tomorrow? So excited about that. I think I'm taking the boy to see it Friday night. So, that'll be fun. He'll have fun.
Has he seen the other ones?
Yeah. Yeah, he's seen them. Force Awakens, he saw. We had to see, one and a half times. So, we will not see this one in 3D.
Dave, you're going tomorrow, he said?
I'm going tomorrow, yeah.
It's a good call.
I'm going to a free screening tomorrow.
I have to avoid the internet on Friday.
They're going to give it away. Yeah. You know what happens?
People are dicks.
I'm going to be mean.
Many Bothans die.
They find the plans. So, Josh, you say it.
That's a podcast.
We'll talk to you next week. See you.